So cold-hearted. I'm practicing bringing out my mama claws. Are you? Ruby shrugs with a hopeful grin. Oh my gosh, Rubes! We don't know yet, but I'm late, and I've been feeling pukey for 2 days. Ruby, I'm so happy for you. I throw my arms around her. You're going to be a great mom, and you're going to be a great auntie. But if you keep hugging me, I might puke on you. Chapter 22. Destiny. By the time Friday evening arrives, I've picked apart my conversation with Ruby until there's nothing left but bones. I know I'm making the right choice, spending this time with Fletch, because every time I get a text from him, or hear his voice, or kiss his lips, my heart sings. But that doesn't mean thinking about the end of our arrangement is easy. Between thoughts of that and being nervous about meeting his family, my stomach has been queasy all day. Which is why I've decided not to think about what will happen after his brother's wedding and to enjoy the here and now. I glance at Fletch as we pull into the restaurant parking lot, with his perfectly combed hair, expertly manicured scruff, and finely pressed black dress shirt and matching slacks, so different from the tousled-haired, thick-scruffed man who makes love to me at night and wakes up wrapped around me like an octopus nearly every morning, and the rugged fisherman who whisked me and Molly away last Saturday at 5 o'clock in the morning to prove there were fish in the lake, after I teased him about not seeing anything but minnows the weekend before. We had such a great time. It felt like we'd found our own private oasis. He glances over, catching me admiring him and bringing those hummingbirds to life. I don't know how there could have been a time when he didn't take my breath away. It's no wonder I'm so nervous about meeting his parents. He parks and reaches across the console for my hand.
You okay, sunshine? You've been kind of quiet.
Yeah, I'm just a little anxious about meeting your family. I touch the gift bag in my lap, second-guessing the socks with tiny fishing poles on them I brought as a birthday gift for his father. I want to make a good impression.
Sweetheart, that's the only kind of impression you could ever make.
I cock a brow. Shall I remind you of the park fiasco? He grins.
You left quite an impression.
Not a good one.
And yet look where I am.
He lifts my hand and kisses the back of it.
My parents will adore you, and you'll love Beth. She's a smartass, too, and she loves to shop. She'll probably want to know where you got that gorgeous dress.
I look down at the peach maxi dress with a wildflower design that Ruby and I bought the other night. It has spaghetti straps, a fitted bodice, and a slit along one side. When Fletch picked me up for dinner, he took one look at me in it, and he was all steamy kisses and filthy promises as he tried to convince me to skip dinner and let him make good on those promises. I almost caved. He climbs out, and as he comes around to open my door, I look out the front window at the sky and whisper, I know this whole thing is complicated, Daddy, but if you've got any advice to make sure I don't ramble or screw up, now's the time to dole it out. No sooner do I say the last word than Fletch opens the door and takes my hand. As my feet hit the ground, he draws me into his arms and looks up at the sky.
Don't worry, Mr. Amore. I've got her.
My throat thickens as he kisses me and whispers,
We've got this, sunshine.
As we head into the restaurant, I know we do, which makes me even more nervous. We're led through the restaurant, and as we approach his family, Jimmy announces,
There they are!
Everyone gets up to greet us, and they're all talking at once. Jimmy and Chuck act like we're old friends, pulling me into bear hugs before Fletch can introduce me to their parents or Beth. Beth, an apple-cheeked, golden-haired stunner, slides in after Jimmy for a hug and says, for my ears only, You two are adorable together. Fletch eyes her as he puts an arm around me, his hand curling around my waist, pulling me closer.
How can you two have secrets already? You just met.
Don't you know women have telepathic powers? Beth says with a smirk. We've been talking about you for weeks. His family laughs, and he just shakes his head.
I wish I were in on those conversations, his mother says.
She's even more attractive in person.
I've been bugging Ryan to bring you around for weeks.
She's been a little busy, Mom, Fletch says. And she's here now, which is all that matters,
his father says. It's easy to see where Fletch and his brothers got their height and athletic builds. With their father's neatly combed hair, perfectly manicured scruff, and serious eyes, it's also obvious that one particular apple did not fall far from the tree.
Destiny, these are my parents, Mary and Hugh. Mom, Dad, this is Destiny.
Oh, honey, it is a pleasure to meet you. His mother embraces me warmly. You as well. Fletch has told me a lot about you. I turn to his father. Happy birthday, Mr. Fletcher. I got you a little something. I hand him the gift bag.
Thank you, Destiny. That was unnecessary, but certainly appreciated.
As his father hugs me, Jimmy says, "Suck up," and coughs to cover it. I know he's kidding, but Fletch glowers at him.
James,
his father says sternly.
What?
Jimmy splays his hands.
It was a joke.
Bless your heart, I say as sweetly as I can. Are you jealous? Do you wish I brought you a little something, too? I can run outside and get a lollipop out of my purse if you'd like. Everyone laughs. She's a keeper, Beth says in a sing-song voice. Fletch puts his arm around me, grinning like he thinks so, too. I turn my attention back to his father. If you don't like them...
Then you can give them to me,
Fletch interrupts.
That's got me curious.
His father peeks into the gift bag and pulls out the socks.
They're perfect. I love to fish. Thank you.
Aren't they adorable? His mother exclaims. Where did you find them? At the same place I get Fletch's socks. Happy Feet? It's around the corner from the grocery store in Harmony Point.
Yeah, check these out.
Fletch lifts his pant leg and shows off the latest pair I surprised him with.
Is that Molly on them? Jimmy asks.
Yes. Aren't they cute? I lower my voice teasingly as we settle into our seats. He has that long second toe thing going on. Might as well cover them up with something pretty.
He gets that from his father, his mother said.
Ugh, Jimmy has it too, Beth says. Don't you want to snip it off at that last knuckle? I say conspiratorially. Beth lights up. Yes.
You're not going anywhere near my feet anymore, Jimmy says. And for your information, that long toe is an indication of how long another body part is. Just ask Chuck. He doesn't have a long second toe. All my length went to a better body part,
Chuck retorts. Fletch and his brothers are still tossing barbs when the waiter arrives to take our drink orders. I order peppermint tea, hoping it'll settle my stomach. The waiter relays the dinner specials and leaves us with menus to peruse while he gets our drinks.
Destiny, where is your charming accent from?
Mary asks. I'm from Rosebell, Georgia.
I don't believe I've heard of that town, she says.
That's not surprising. It's about as big as a flea's butt. I just moved here a few months ago.
How do you like it so far? She asks.
I'm loving it. My best friend who I grew up with, Ruby, lives here. And now that Fletch and I are seeing each other, life is even more beautiful. Fletch's hand circles my shoulder and he kisses my temple.
Thanks, sunshine.
His parents exchange an approving glance, and I feel a pang of guilt about our ruse. But I'm not going to let it ruin our night, because my feelings are real, even if we have an end date.
Who is this guy? And what has he done with our brother?
Chuck asks.
What's the matter, Chucky? Do you need a lollipop too?
Fletch teases. I pat his leg. It's okay. I get it. I look around the table. I work part-time as a pet groomer, and I groomed Molly for a few months before I got to know Fletch better than just a quick hello and a scowl for putting bows in Molly's hair, which I now realize was a mistake because she likes to eat them. But to be honest, I didn't think Fletch was anything like he is. In fact, I called him Grumpy Gus.
Now that's fitting,
Chuck says. It certainly was. He kept himself as walled off as Fort Knox.
Just about every woman who sees him lusts after him, and let me tell you something. I lower my voice. I did not see the attraction. Fletch's head snaps toward me.
What?
Oh, come on, you know that. I told you I didn't do Ken dolls. His parents stifle a laugh, but Jimmy, Chuck, and Beth crack up. Fletch grits out,
Jesus.
I pat his leg again, but I quickly realized the error of my ways. There is so much more to this man than just a handsome face who looks like he walked off the pages of a fashion magazine. The closer we got, the more I learned about him. He's like a gobstopper. I could lick and lick and lick, revealing one layer after another and never tire of it. Laughter erupts from his brothers and Beth. You laugh, but just when I think I have him figured out, I suck off another layer and something new springs up. I turn to Fletch, who looks like he's going to laugh too. I think I could lick you my whole life and never stop discovering new things about you. Why is that so funny? He pulls me against him as laughter explodes around the table, and he says,
Waiter, anyone else need a drink?
Which makes everyone laugh harder. Fletch buries his face in my hair and says,
You're talking about licking and sucking me off.
I gasp. Oh my goodness, I did not mean that. I meant... Laughter steals my voice, and as Fletch presses his lips to mine, Jimmy says,
No wonder he's smiling all the time.
Sparking more hysterics. The heckling continues through drinks and dinner as we get to know one another better, and I can't help but join in. I love seeing the snarky side of Fletch and the way his parents look at him and at each other. They're an affectionate couple, not overly so like my parents were, but they share smiles and caring touches, and they take the jokes in stride, both of them joining in with the fun. They ask about what it was like growing up in Georgia, and I get a pang of homesickness while I talk about it, which makes me hyper-aware of the gurgling in my stomach. Are your parents still in Georgia? His mother asks. Why does this question still sting so much? I do not want to tear up. Fletch takes my hand under the table, and it makes me feel even more emotional. But I manage to hold myself together. My mother died when I was 11, and my father passed away last year. I don't have any other family in Rosebell. That's why Ruby urged me to move here and finally start my business. Fletch squeezes my hand as his mother puts her hand over her heart and says, Oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry about your parents.
We all are,
his father says, and the others chime in agreement. Thank you, but they're still here, shining down on me from above.
And they're proud as hell of you, sunshine.
Fletch kisses my temple again.
They should be,
Chuck says.
Destiny is quite a businesswoman, and she's an excellent baker, too.
The baking is all my mama's doing, and I have your brother to thank for what little business savvy I have. He has been my saving grace, in more ways than one.
All I did was help you get organized,
Fletch says.
The rest is all you. Proposal planning is quite a unique niche,
his father says.
You should hear about the proposal she's putting together,
Fletch says.
It's going to be phenomenal.
I would love to hear about it, his mother says. Me too, Beth adds. It's going to be Parisian themed, and I'm holding it right here on the roof of this restaurant next Saturday night.
On the roof?
Chuck asks. Yes. I know it seems like a strange idea, but this building has the most spectacular view of the lights of the town. It was a bit pricey to get the roof cleaned, and creating a safe area so my client and his soon-to-be fiancé aren't at risk of falling off means paying to have barriers put up. Not that I think they'll be anywhere near the edge, but you never know what's going to happen when two people are caught up in love.
That would be a worse proposal than trying to hitch Fletch to his stalker, Jimmy says with a laugh.
You've got that right. That's why I'm doing it. I'm going to camouflage the barriers with cloth that'll make them look like stone walls and add lights and flowers. I designed beautiful cards to go in the bouquets, and each one has a memory printed on it of a special moment they've shared. I'm excited about those smaller personal touches. I describe my vision for the event from start to finish, and I'm surprised at how interested everyone is. Even Fletch's brothers ask questions.
And you're doing this all yourself?
His father asks. Well, as I mentioned, Fletch has been there to help keep me organized, and he and Ruby are going to help me set up the day of the event. I think what you're doing is incredible, Beth says. I work in marketing, and I can think of a dozen ways you can get your name out there. We should talk sometime. Definitely. And if you ever want to hire an assistant, I'd love to get involved. If I had the means, I'd hire you in a heartbeat. I mean that. I really like Beth. Maybe someday I'll have more work than I can handle, and then you'll be the first one I call for help.
You know she's not kidding, right?
Jimmy asks.
That look in her eyes isn't going to go away.
Well, I sure hope not, I say. The world needs more people who believe in love enough to help others find their happily ever afters. Beth lifts her wine glass. Here's to one day. To one day. I lift my cup of tea and take a sip.
You girls would make a great team, his mother says. Destiny, will you be there during the proposal to watch it unfold?
I wish I could, but I don't want to impose. I hired a very discreet photography and videography duo. I'll get to see the pictures and the video and use some to promote my business.
It's a shame you'll miss out on seeing it firsthand, his mother said. Who's building the replica of the Eiffel Tower?
Fletch's friend Piper and her sister Bridget is handling the flowers. They gave me great deals. How big is the tower? Beth asks. It's going to be about 8 feet tall. Piper's building it in levels, so it'll be easier to transport, and she'll set it up on the roof the day of the event. It's almost done. I can show you pictures. I reach for my purse and remember I left it in the car. Shoot, I'm sorry. I don't have my phone.
I have the pictures you sent me.
Fletch takes out his phone. Great. I wanted to show them the pictures we took at the lake last weekend, too.
You went fishing again?
His father asked.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Fletch says, scrolling through his photos. He woke me up at dawn and surprised me with the trip. It was wonderful. We caught a bunch of fish and stayed all day. I look at his brothers and Beth. Fletch told me all sorts of stories about the trouble y'all got into when you were younger. We saw a gorgeous sunset and then we stargazed with Molly. It was a magical night. Fletch caresses my shoulder with his thumb and I can't help wanting more nights like this. Fletch stargazed? Beth asks incredulously.
Guess miracles can happen,
Jimmy teased.
Yeah.
Fletch shakes his head.
Destiny made fish and chips using the fish they caught and brought enough for all of us after basketball last Sunday,
Chuck said.
Best fish and chips I ever ate.
Best peach muffins, too,
Jimmy adds. Y'all are too sweet. It sounds like a wonderful weekend. His mother says.
It was,
Fletch says, as he scrolls through the pictures on his phone. I lean closer, looking at the pictures. There they are. Show them the one of you and Molly in the water. It's one of my favorites. As he passes the phone around the table, I say, I love the way the sun is glittering off the water like diamonds. And Fletch looks so relaxed, holding his fishing pole in one hand and petting Molly with the other. It makes me happy.
That is a great picture,
Jimmy says as the phone makes its way back to Fletch.
Which is your favorite, Ryan?
His father asks. Fletch scrolls to a picture.
This one.
He shows me the one of me taking a selfie of us. My hair is damp and messy from a dip in the lake, and I've got no makeup on, but my cheeks are pink from the sun. Fletch is sitting on the blanket a few feet behind me. He's wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and he has his arm around Molly. I look a mess in that one.
Sometimes I wonder if we're looking at the same person. You look happy and beautiful in that picture.
He leans in and kisses me, and my heart soars as he passes the phone across the table to his father first.
You can scroll to see the others. The pictures of the tower are right after them.
As his parents scroll through the pictures, his mother holds one up and says, "This is my favorite." In the picture, my hair is in a ponytail, and I'm wearing what I call my bug-eye sunglasses because they're huge. Fletch is sitting behind me, kissing the back of my shoulder. That is another of my favorites, too, but I keep that to myself because it makes me emotional to think about how that tender kiss took me by surprise. It felt more intimate than a kiss on my lips and made me feel like we were a real couple. Fletch's mother and Beth ooh and ah over the pictures of us, and everyone is as impressed with the tower Piper is making as I am, which pleases me to no end. As the phone comes back to Fletch, his mother says, "It looks like your client is going to have a spectacular event. Do you have a dream proposal, Destiny?" "Yes, sort of. I hope it'll be something magical that comes from my forever love's romantic heart."
"That knocks you out of the running, Fletch," Jimmy says. "You don't have a romantic bone in your body."
"Yes, he does," I argue. "Did I not just tell you about our great day at the lake? Romance comes from more than just roses and candlelight dinners. The first time I met with a potential client, Fletch gave me a special gold pen he had made just for me with 'Get the Yes' printed on it in pink, my favorite color. I was so nervous that evening, I thought I might be sick, and he told me how he believed in me and made me remember that there was nothing I couldn't do. Not only that, but after the client signed on with me, Fletch sent me a special bouquet of my favorite flowers. When I signed a new client last week, he sent me flowers again, with a note that said he heard my father cheering me on from across town." My throat thickens with the memory, and I push it away to shut Jimmy down one last time in case he still has doubts. And he does other things, too. Sometimes when I work late, he cooks me dinner, and when Molly ate my lingerie, he replaced it. "Your brother is full of romantic bones." Fletch gives Jimmy a smug grin.
"I'd like to hear more about Molly eating your lingerie," Jimmy retorts. Chuck elbows him. "Let's not go there," his father says sternly and turns a kinder tone on me. "You're right about different flavors of romance, and we men have a way of only bringing it out for the most special people in our lives."
"Yes, you do," his mother says adoringly. "Destiny, honey, I understand wanting the proposal to come from your significant other's heart, but you're planning proposals for a living. Do you have something in mind?"
"Not anything specific. Hopefully he'll know me so well, he'll create something he knows I'll love, like I do for my clients. That's why I ask them so many questions about every aspect of their lives and relationship, so I can help figure out which special moment or moments to pick. Like with the Parisian proposal. The couple has wanted to go to Paris forever, but they haven't been able to get there. I'm bringing it to them in a way they'll never forget and wrapping all their special moments into it. But it could be anything, from recreating the moment he fell in love with me to something new that he just knows I'll love."
"I hope you're taking notes, Rai-Rai," Chuck says.
Fletch picks up his drink, looking at it instead of at Chuck.
"Cool your jets, bro. We just started seeing each other."
My stomach pitches at how easily he says it. They're all looking at us, and I scramble for something to say to break the tension. "He's right, and we'd both know it if he wasn't. That fallen in love moment is so special. It's one the other person can't share at the time if they don't know it's happening, but if it's recreated for them, then they get to share it, and it will forever be etched in both their hearts. I know I'm rambling, but I can't stop. We've all heard stories about how people knew the moment they fell in love, like when they first heard their person laugh, or saw them dance, or had a meaningful interaction with them."
"We know that's not you and Kendall, given the stalker girl who arranged your first meaningful interaction,"
Jimmy teases. Thankful for the levity, I say, "That was not my finest moment." Fletch drapes an arm around the back of my chair.
"It was stressful, but you were pretty damn cute, all flustered and still standing your ground."
Is he trying to give me whiplash?
"I knew I loved Hugh the moment he ran his grandparents' boat into my parents' dock when I was 16 and he was 18, his mother says. "He stood on that boat yelling at me for sunbathing in the grass, like it was my fault he got caught up in gawking at me instead of watching where he was going. All I could do was laugh. Our dock was shattered, and I'm falling to my knees, laughing hysterically. He jumped off that boat and stomped through the water to the grass, staring down at me, and you know what he said?
What? I asked. She lowers her voice an octave.
I've been trying to get up the nerve to ask you out, and now my grandparents are going to kill me. I'm heading to Mexico. Want to come?
What did you say? I ask.
I said, no thanks, I'm not done sunbathing, and I'm pretty sure my father is going to kill you when he gets home. The fool sat down beside me and said, in that case, I might as well enjoy the view with the time I've got left.
Dad, you had game,
Chuck says.
Where do you think you boys got it from?
His father says proudly.
He came by every day after that,
his mother adds, and he worked all summer to repair my father's dock. I was so in love with him by the end of that summer, I asked him to go to Mexico with me. I love this story, I exclaim. Did you go?
No,
his father gazes lovingly at his wife.
I told her she'd lost her chance. I was leaving for college at the end of the summer.
Then he wrote to me every week and came to see me during every break. He proposed to me on that dock 2 years later, and we were married there after he graduated from college.
And I'd do it all over again.
He leans in and kisses her. That's what I want. Inescapable, unquestionable love.
Okay, that's it, Beth exclaims. Jimmy, we need a do-over proposal.
Fletch chuckles.
You mean you didn't like almost dying when he proposed?
Dying, I ask. Please tell me you're joking.
I'm not.
He hikes a thumb at Jimmy.
This numbnut put the ring in a piece of carrot cake, and when they served it, instead of getting down on one knee, he went to find the waiter to get a glass of water because he was so nervous his mouth was dry.
Meanwhile, Beth says, I'm chowing down on my favorite dessert, and suddenly there's something sharp blocking my airway. So there I am, choking in the middle of a fancy restaurant, and Jimmy's talking with a waiter. When he finally notices, he knocks into the waiter, making him fall onto another couple's table, and plows over a busboy like he's a linebacker, sending him flying into some guy's lap.
Hey, I saved you with the Heimlich. The ring shot out of her mouth and landed in someone's soup like a freaking cartoon.
Jimmy laughs. Oh my gosh. I cover my mouth, trying not to laugh.
You must have been so scared.
Nah, I knew they'd give us the ring back,
Jimmy says. Beth elbows him, but she laughs along with everyone else.
See, don't you think I deserve a do-over?
If you want one, I'm happy to help. But sometimes the universe knows what's right before you do. And you have to admit, that's an unforgettable proposal you can laugh about with your kids. Maybe it was meant to be your story. I glance at Fletch, and he gives me that special smile that makes my chest flutter. Only this time, my stomach burns with the reality of our situation. And maybe this is meant to be ours.
Fletch. As the night wears on, the conversation turns from proposals to my parents sharing stories about times when we've screwed things up throughout the years, but I'm still sidetracked by what Destiny said about the universe knowing what's right before we do. Could she be right? Could we be right? Or is seeing her with my family screwing with my head? When we finally leave the restaurant, my mother embraces me and says, "She's a special girl, honey. I hope we'll see more of her." I glance at Destiny as she exchanges phone numbers with Beth and say, "I hope so too." After a round of goodbyes and promises between the girls to keep in touch, we head home.
"You have an incredible family," Destiny says softly. "I really like Beth, too. I'd give anything to be able to hire her one day. You're really lucky to have them all in your life."
"I am lucky. Thanks for going tonight." She doesn't follow it up with her typical upbeat ramblings, and I noticed she didn't eat much of her dinner, which makes me wonder if I messed up by inviting her. "Was tonight too much, Sunshine, being around my family? Did it make you miss yours even more?"
"I always miss my family. I had a really nice time tonight. I'm just tired."
She's quiet the rest of the way back to her place. When I pull into her driveway, she turns to me with an uneasy expression and says,
I'm not feeling that well. I think I've been working too hard and just need a good night's rest. Would you mind if we stay at our own places tonight?
My gut sinks. No, of course not. I reach for my door.
You don't need to walk me up. You should get back to Molly.
I clench my jaw, trying not to react. I shouldn't feel like she's brushing me off, given our situationship. But after spending nearly every night together the last couple of weeks, this sure as hell feels like a brush off.
Thanks for tonight. Your family is really special.
So are you, sunshine. Molly and I'll miss you. I lean in and kiss her. Get some rest. I watch her head inside without her usual peppy steps and can't shake the feeling that things have changed.
Chapter 23. Fletch.
I wake with the same uncomfortable feeling the next morning and check my phone. I texted Destiny 40 minutes after I dropped her off, but she still hasn't responded. She said she was tired, and maybe she was, but I have a feeling that was just her way of letting me down easy instead of saying she needed space. I go for a long run, mentally replaying last night 100 times. The more I pick it apart, the clearer I see how unfair it was to ask her to go with me. My brothers can be a lot to handle, but bringing my parents and Beth into the equation probably not only made her feel her losses even more deeply, but allowed that boundless heart of hers to take hold. I should have realized it would make things harder for her, but man, I wanted her there with me. Her voice whispers through my mind.
When we stage our breakup, we'll do it in a way that doesn't make them hate me.
Making me see how fucked up it was that I thought we might actually have a chance together. As much as it hurts to admit it to myself, if she thought I was her Mr. Right, she would have worded that very differently. By the time I finish my run and shower, it's after 9, and I still haven't heard from Destiny. Even on the rare mornings when we don't wake up together, we've exchanged several texts by this time. Nothing is sitting right with me, so I thumb out another text to her.
Good morning, sunshine. I hope you got some rest. Molly and I missed you last night.
I read it over and delete the last line. If she wants space, she doesn't need pressure. Fuck. If that's the case, I shouldn't even text her. This is another reason I don't do relationships. They're messy and complicated and too easy to fuck up. No matter how I look at it, the way she turned me away last night spells trouble. I read the message again and add a more thoughtful line. Fletch.
Good morning, sunshine. I hope you got some rest. I'm about to run errands. Need anything?
10 minutes later, she still hasn't responded, and I'm wearing a path in the floor. I call Perfect Pause to see if she was called into work, but they say she's not scheduled until Tuesday. I'm tempted to head over to her place, but I'm not going to be that annoyingly clingy guy. Instead, I sit down to do some work. Half an hour later, I'm still unable to concentrate, so I grab my keys and head out to run those errands. It's almost noon when I finish putting my groceries away, and I decide to call her. It goes to voicemail.
Hey, sunshine, I've been trying to reach you. Give me a call when you get a chance. I'm getting worried.
I pocket my phone, trying not to think about how she always returns my texts and calls. But that's like trying not to breathe. This isn't right. She doesn't avoid situations. This is how we got into a mess last time. I grab Molly's leash. Come on, girl, let's go see what's up. A few minutes later, I'm knocking on Destiny's door for the third time. Her car is out front, and I'm getting seriously worried. I lift my hand to knock one last time before breaking the damn thing down when the door opens and my heart sinks. Destiny's holding a blanket around her shoulders. Her hair is a tangled mess. She's pale. Her cheeks are drawn. Her eyes are watery and red, and she looks like a fraction of herself. One of my t-shirts hangs nearly to her knees over gray sweatpants, and she's wearing blue and yellow fuzzy socks.
Baby, what happened?
I step forward, but she holds her hand up.
Don't come any closer. I have puke on me.
I don't care. Why didn't you call me or answer my texts?
I didn't want to bother you, and I think my phone is still in my bag from last night.
Her hand flies to her mouth, and she drops the blanket, hurrying toward the bathroom. I unhook Molly's leash and go after Destiny.
She's kneeling on the floor, clutching the toilet. I hold her hair back as she throws up what little she has left in her stomach. Molly stands in the doorway, watching over her favorite girl. When Destiny stops puking, I rub her back. "It's okay, sunshine, I've got you." She groans and turns away. "Don't look at me." "I like looking at you." I flush the toilet and wet a washcloth. "I should have checked on you, but I thought you wanted space."
"I just didn't feel good."
Crouching beside her, I gently turn her face toward me and begin wiping it clean.
"You're burning up. How long have you been like this?"
She shrugs.
"I went to bed after you dropped me off and woke up a little while later. I've been throwing up on and off since then."
"Have you taken anything for your fever?" She shakes her head and presses her hand to the side of her face.
"Everything hurts. I think I got it from Ruby. She said she felt..."
Tears spill from her eyes.
"Oh no, she's probably not pregnant after all."
A sob falls from her lips. I pull her into my arms.
"It's okay." "No, it's not."
Tears rain down her cheeks.
"She's going to be heartbroken if she's not pregnant, and she's going to need me."
"I know, sweetheart, but let's not worry about something you're not sure has happened." I kiss her forehead, keeping her close and rubbing her back, wishing I could put her heart on pause so she wouldn't be sad on top of being sick. I frame her face between my hands and wipe her tears with the pads of my thumbs. "Let's get some medicine and fluids in you. Do you think you can handle a tepid bath to bring down your temperature?"
"Maybe."
"Okay. Do you have Gatorade or ginger ale, Coke, crackers?"
"No, but I'm okay."
She tries to stand up and sways. I lift her into my arms, carrying her out of the bathroom with Molly on her heels. "You're not okay, but you will be." As I head for the stairs, she says,
"Don't go up there. I puked in both beds."
"It's okay. I'll clean them up." I turn toward the living room.
"That's not safe either. There's puke in the trash can next to the couch."
"Thanks for the warning, Mount Vesuvius." That earns a small smile. "Let's get you settled, and then I'll clean up and get you into a bath to see if we can bring down that fever." I lay her on the couch and can't believe Molly's not going after Clementine, who's curled up at the other end. She's too busy sniffing the puke in the trash can. "No, Molly," I say in my sternest voice as I cover Destiny with a clean blanket. Thankfully, Molly listens and jumps onto the couch with Destiny, sending Clementine up to the back of it. Molly settles behind Destiny's legs, and Clementine stretches out on the top of the cushion behind her. "Do you want me to get them down?" Destiny shakes her head and rests her cheek on the pillow, closing her eyes. I tuck her hair behind her ear. "Where do you keep your medicine, sweetheart?"
"Kitchen cabinet above the stove."
"I'll be right back." I grab the trash can and take it into the kitchen. After giving Destiny Tylenol, I put a cool washcloth on her forehead and a glass of water on the coffee table. I call Marshall as I head upstairs.
"Hey, Fletch, what's up?"
"Are you busy? I need a favor."
"Name it."
"Destiny is sick and I need a few things, but I don't want to leave her. Would you mind picking up some Gatorade, a bottle of Coke to settle her stomach, maybe some tea and crackers?"
"Peppermint tea helps nausea."
"Fuck, I should have known something was off when she ordered that. Grab some, please, and fuzzy socks if you can find them. The brighter, the better, and..." I list off a few more things that I hope might help her feel better.
"I'm on it. You okay?"
"Yeah, I stop myself from saying it hurts to see her this way, because while this is probably just a virus, Marshall has suffered much worse.
"I'm good. Thanks, man."
I go from room to room, upstairs and down, changing linens and cleaning up puke, and throw a load of dirty laundry into the washer. Marshall texts to say he's out front while I'm filling the bathtub for Destiny. I turn it off and head downstairs. I see Destiny is sleeping and meet Marshall at the front door.
"Thanks, man."
He hands me the bag.
"How's she doing?"
"She's sleeping, but I'm about to get her into the tub."
"Has she been sick all day?"
"Yeah, it started last night, but I didn't know. I was at my place."
"At least you're here now." "I know that look, and I remember the feeling that came with it. As much as this sucks, at least you know that cold heart of yours is still ticking."
I half laugh, half scoff.
"Right.
Thanks again.
Let me know if you need anything else."
"I will." I close the door and take the bags into the kitchen. After putting the groceries away, I stuff the rainbow-colored socks in my back pocket and head back to Destiny. I hate waking her, but I think she'll feel better when she's cleaned up and her fever is down. Brushing a kiss to her head, I whisper, "Sunshine." Her eyes flutter open. "Think you can handle a quick bath so we can get you into clean clothes?" She nods, and I carry her upstairs with her furry sentinels in tow. Molly lies across the threshold to the bathroom, and Clementine watches from behind her as I undress Destiny and help her into the bath. I kneel beside the tub and touch her cheek. "The Tylenol must be kicking in. You don't feel quite as warm as you did earlier." She closes her eyes, and I gently bathe her.
"Thank you,"
she says weakly.
"You shouldn't stay. I don't want to get you sick."
"Shh, I'm not going anywhere." Destiny dozes on and off throughout the day, but I'm able to keep her hydrated. Other than a few bouts of dry heaves in the afternoon, the nausea seems to have passed. Tylenol is keeping her fever at bay, and she was able to eat a few crackers and keep them down. It's early evening, and she's cuddled beneath a blanket with her head in my lap, wearing a clean pair of sweats and her new fuzzy socks, which perked her up for a few minutes when I put them on her. We tried to watch The Office, but she's still too out of it to concentrate.
"I hope I didn't get your family sick,"
she says softly. "You didn't. I spoke with them earlier. They're fine, and they hope you feel better soon." She falls quiet again, and I run my fingers through her hair. I combed it for her after her bath, but it's tangled and messy again. "Would you like me to read to you?"
"You don't have to. You've already done so much."
"I'd like to, if you're up to it. I think you'll like this story I found."
"You can try."
She closes her eyes. "Let me know if it bothers you and I'll stop." I pick up the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society from the end table where I put it while she was sleeping earlier and begin reading the first line of her mother's favorite book. Destiny looks up at me with tears in her eyes. I wink and continue reading.
"Fletch."
Her voice is shaky as tears slide down her cheeks, but she's smiling.
"Where did you get that?"
"I had Marshall pick it up when he got the other things." Her forehead falls to my thigh, her shoulders jerking with her tears. I rub her back, my chest tightening. "I'm sorry. I didn't think it would upset you."
"It didn't."
She sniffles and rests her cheek on my thigh again, her tears flowing freely.
"I'm happy, not sad."
Relief washes over me, and I continue reading. Eventually, her tears stop, and I feel her whole body sigh. A few chapters later, she's sleeping again. I keep reading, because not only am I invested in the story, but I'm also deeply invested in her, and on the off chance that she hears my voice in her sleep, I hope it brings her sweet dreams of her parents. She shifts, mumbling in her sleep.
"He wasn't supposed to be so wonderful."
I don't know if she's dreaming or not, but if she is, I selfishly hope that was about me.
Chapter 24. Destiny. My fever broke sometime during the night, and by Sunday afternoon I felt much more like myself, although still as tired as a wet dish rag. I wanted to go over the deliveries for Arjun's proposal and check the designs and spelling for the special moment signs that I'm having printed tomorrow, but my charming caretaker refused to let me work. He said I'd worn myself ragged the last few weeks, making sure everything was perfect, and that my only job today was to rest and recuperate so I'd be in tip-top shape for the event next weekend. Then, while I lay on the couch with Molly and Clementine, he went through each of the 37 special moment designs looking for typos, and after he was done, he went over my spreadsheets with a fine-tooth comb. He compared them to the delivery schedule, and even went through the invoices to make sure nobody had overcharged me. When he finished all that, he made me soup and toast for dinner and read more of my mother's favorite book to me. Now we're sharing a lounge chair in my backyard. I'm sitting between his legs with my back against his chest. His arms are wrapped around me, and every now and then he kisses the top of my head or pets Molly, who's sleeping in the grass beside us. She hasn't left my side either. I don't know which of Fletch's skills is stronger, his organization and attention to detail, or his caretaking abilities. He's been nothing short of amazing, taking such good care of me and calling in a favor for the things I needed, and the things I hadn't realized I needed, like the socks and my mother's favorite book. Listening to him read me the story made me feel like I could get through puking all night if that was the turn I took. I gaze up at the stars, so full of emotions, I'm sure my parents can feel them in whatever realm they exist. I put my hands over Fletch's, and he laces our fingers together. I want to freeze this evening and stay in this bubble of happiness forever.
How are you feeling, sunshine?
Good.
Are you warm enough?
Yes, your body is like a furnace. He kisses my cheek.
Around you it is. You've been quiet. Are you thinking about Ruby or your big event next weekend?
I texted Ruby earlier and was relieved to hear she wasn't sick like I was. She'd called a few hours later to tell me she'd taken a pregnancy test and the results were positive. She's going to schedule an appointment with her doctor to confirm, but we were both in tears. I was actually thinking about you. You're pretty good at this caretaking stuff. You inspired another item for my checklist. He kisses my head again.
What's that? Someone who's good with spreadsheets?
I'm definitely adding that to my list. I meant caretaking. It's been a long time since anyone has taken care of me like that. When I was young, my mom did, and my dad took good care of me after she was gone, but it was different.
I would think it would be. Mothers and fathers handle things differently.
My chest aches from a truth I've held in for years. This time, as I look up at the stars, my eyes tear up. I love you, Daddy. Please don't think I wish anything was different other than Mama not dying. I love the way you cared for me, but I want to share my truth with Fletch because I might never feel this close to anyone again.
Are you all right, sunshine?
He presses a kiss behind my ear.
You're squeezing my fingers pretty tight.
I'm okay. Sorry about that. Can I tell you something without you thinking poorly about my dad?
I have nothing but respect for your father and the incredible job of raising you he did. So unless you're about to tell me that he physically or emotionally hurt you, I don't think you could mar his reputation in my eyes.
Now you've got me all weepy. I laugh softly and wipe my eyes. Thank you. He was a special man, and he deserves that.
But, he whispers.
It's not really a but. Everything I've told you has been true about how he pulled through after losing my mother. But it was more difficult than I let on. Growing up without my mom was really hard. I never wanted to make things worse for my dad. So I didn't tell him when I was lonely for her or jealous about other girls doing special mother-daughter things. Tears slide down my cheeks. We had a big event in Rosebell called the Azalea Festival. Every girl wants to be chosen as the Azalea Princess, but you have to be 15 to enter the pageant. My mom won when she was 16, and we used to talk about what it would be like when I was old enough to compete. You know by now that I'm not a dressy girl. But my mama loved that festival to no end. She had dreams of me winning. We'd be out shopping for groceries, and she'd stop by the dress shop, and we'd look at all the fancy dresses, and she'd talk about what it would be like for me to win like she did. And then she was gone, and I shake my head, unable to choke out anything more.
It's okay, baby.
He holds me tighter.
Let it all out.
His words break the emotional dam, and my tears flow like rivers. There were so many times like that when I felt lost. When I got my period, which you probably don't want to hear about, but it was scary going through it without my mom. I don't know why I didn't go to my dad or even Ruby's mother, but I couldn't. I went to Ruby, and she told her mother that she got her period so her mom would buy her the products I needed.
That's a good friend.
Yes, she is. But there were times I couldn't even tell her about because they were too big and I knew nobody could help me get through them. I swipe at my tears. Like when I'd get invited to something at school and race through the front door to share my news with my mom, only to have reality take me back to my knees.
A sob bursts free, and Fletch's chest expands against my back. He tightens his hold on me.
That's so fucking unfair. I wish I could have been there for you.
I shake my head. I wouldn't have let you see me that way any more than I'd have let my dad. If he'd known all the feelings I hid from him, he'd have found a way to be with me every second. That's how much he loved me. I am so grateful for his love, and I don't know if saying all this makes me a rotten person, but he couldn't replace my mom. He tried so hard, but he couldn't fill the hole her death left inside me. It used to swallow me up from the inside out. There were times I felt like I couldn't breathe, and I was afraid to tell him because he'd lost her too. Fletch repositions us, bringing my side against his chest and holds me while I cry.
That doesn't make you rotten, Sunshine. Your father was a smart man. I'm sure he knew nobody could replace your mom, and was doing everything he could to lessen the pain, not replace her. A parent is a million different things to each of their children, and every one of those things is unique to that parent and child. You were an only child, so you got all the best parts of her, including all those secret mother-daughter parts.
I'm unable to stop the rush of tears spilling down my cheeks, but I lift my face from his chest so I can see his honest eyes. You don't think he'd be disappointed in me for feeling that way?
No, baby. You were a little girl, trying to deal with a loss no child should have to endure. Sharing those feelings with me doesn't mean you love your father any less than you did an hour ago. It means you finally found someone you trust enough to share them with.
I nod, tears blurring my vision. I'm counting on that. I swipe at my tears. Sorry for blubbering all over your shirt. I touch my forehead to his chest and close my eyes. Guess you won't be writing home about this weekend. If you weren't cleaning up my puke, you were dealing with my tears. He hugs me.
That's what best guy friends are for.
I tip my head back. How'd I get lucky enough to end up stuck like glue to a friend like you?
I've been asking myself that for weeks.
As I settle in against his chest again, he says,
Which of the stars is your mom, and which is your dad?
I'm pretty sure the stars I think they aren't the same from night to night. The sky never looks the same twice, but I try to choose the same ones I've been talking to since my daddy passed. I point to a bright star. See that bright one? That's him. And see the one to the right of it? That's my mama. She always held his right hand.
Well, Sunshine, they're still shining down on you. Know what that means?
What?
You've got nothing to worry about or feel guilty about.
His voice is low and reassuring.
You didn't hurt your parents' feelings by trusting me.
As my heart fills to near bursting, he adds,
But saying you don't know which stars they are, that might have stung.
And just like that, I'm smiling again.
Chapter 25, Fletch. Destiny spent the week coming up with proposal ideas for her two newest clients and going over every detail for Arjun's event. We worked together the last two nights, organizing and packing the decorations and supplies. By Saturday morning, I know the event is going to be perfect, but Destiny is like an anxious Energizer bunny zipping around the house in nothing but my t-shirt, which she slept in, and panties. As I make breakfast, I hear her moving things around in the living room, talking to Molly and Clementine. The proposal isn't taking place until this evening, but the landscaper created a gorgeous stone walkway on the roof of the restaurant yesterday, and we're meeting him there around 2 after he's done laying turf on the roof. I set our food on the table and peer into the living room. The neatly organized plastic containers that were stacked and ready to be transported are now strewn across the floor and on the couches. Destiny is fishing around in a box on the couch as she consults the supply checklist. If anyone had said there would come a day when noisy, chaotic mornings would make me happy, I'd have told them they were nuts. Now I can't imagine a single morning without my sweet whirlwind turning things upside down. She's opened a door in me that I thought was soldered closed. The wedding is next weekend, and as often as I think about trying to make a go of things with Destiny, I know where her head is. My mama taught me to always say what I feel. Heck, my heart gets tangled up with people and things and moments all the time. If I tried to hide it, I'd probably burst. Just last night, she referenced when we break up again, not if, and there were no tears or misgivings in sight. I'm not dumb enough to bring it up and risk losing the last week she's already promised me. This one's got everything, she says to Molly and Clementine, snapping me back to the moment. Let's check the other... She nearly trips over the cat as she turns around. Clementine scampers up the stairs and Molly follows. Sorry, Clem! Okay, I think that's enough, sunshine. She opens a box at the other end of the couch. I just want to check this box one more time. We went through each of them three times last night. Why don't you come eat some breakfast? I'm too nervous to eat. This is one of the biggest days of Arjun's and Mara's lives, and they're counting on me to make it perfect. And it will be. You've made sure of that many times over. I move her hair over one shoulder and wrap my arms around her from behind. We've got hours before we're expected at the restaurant. I kiss her neck. You need to relax, sweetheart, or you'll drive yourself batty and flatten poor Clementine in the process. She laughs softly. Relax? Do you even know me? I know every inch of you. I slide my hands beneath her shirt, and I know just how to help you relax. I press one hand to her stomach, keeping her close, as I tease her breast with the other.
More like rev me up.
Rev you up. I nip her earlobe. Make you come. I slide my other hand into her panties, teasing her with my fingers until she's slick with desire. And relaxing will follow. I dip my fingers inside her and roll her nipple between my finger and thumb, squeezing just hard enough to hear her gasp and feel her pussy clench.
Fletch,
she says needily and tries to turn in my arms, but I don't let her. Sunshine. I've got you just where I want you. I push my boxer briefs down and step out of them, pressing my cock against her ass. She whimpers and pushes her ass back, grinding against my erection. Do you want my cock, baby?
Yes.
I push her panties down and she steps out of them. You can have it after you come. The air rushes from her lungs.
So unfair.
I bite her earlobe again and she moans. I move my hand from her breast to her clit. She holds on to my arms, breathing harder as she rides my fingers. That's my girl. Chase that climax so I can fuck you.
Oh, God.
I grind against her ass, working her faster. She moans and mules, her breaths coming faster and harder.
Don't stop.
I feast on her neck, using my tongue and teeth.
Yes. So good. Flat.
Raspy, pleasure-drenched sounds fly from her lips as her pussy clenches tight and hot around my fingers. Before she hits the peak, I wrap one arm around her waist, angling her toward the arm of the couch, and drive my cock into her in one hard thrust.
Yes!
She grabs the arm of the couch, so fucking trusting. So beautiful and hungry for me. She ignites desires that tear through me, unleashing the possessive beast that wants to carry her off to my cave and never let her go. I grab her hips, pounding into her, her desperate pleas fueling my desires. Greedy emotions coil inside me like a viper waiting to strike. I put my hand on her back, bending her over the arm of the couch, trying to put space between me and those dangerous feelings. But they're inescapable. Seeping into my pores, permeating my every breath as we're catapulted into ecstasy, her sensual cries mixing with my lustful curses as we ride out our passion.
Chapter 26. Destiny. I'm strangely calm as we set up for Arjun's proposal, which might have something to do with Fletch banging the stress right out of me this morning. And maybe also the fact that the most important people in my life are here with me. John came with Ruby and stayed to help. I think he just wanted to stick close to her since she's still feeling nauseous. I told Ruby I could set up without her, but she wouldn't hear of it. We're making good progress. The turf is laid, the barriers are in place several feet away from the edge of the roof, and the restaurant staff is setting up the table and chairs. Piper should be here any minute to erect the tower, and the floral delivery should arrive soon. I glance across the roof at Fletch, who is stringing waterfall lights with John between the poles we've put up around the perimeter of the proposal area. He looks over and winks. "Stop gawking, woman." Ruby steps into my line of sight, blocking my view of him, and shoves another bundle of stone-patterned fabric into my hands. "Chop, chop, we have work to do." "But I like ogling him." We shake out the fabric and spread it over one of the barriers. The effect is exactly what I'd hoped for, giving the appearance of stone walls around Arjun and Mara's love nest. "You like doing a lot more than ogling him," she says as we retrieve another bundle of fabric. A male voice booms through the air.
"Where do you want this?"
I turn around and my heart skips at the sight of Jimmy and Chuck carrying a piece of the Eiffel Tower and Beth carrying a cardboard box. "Oh my gosh, you can put it there." I point to where I'd like the tower. "What are you guys doing here?" "How am I going to convince you to hire me if I don't learn the business?" Beth answers. Chuck calls out,
"Family helps family."
And my heart lodges in my throat.